Let's take one more trip to Yellowstone Park. Earlier this week, we broadcast the show from Yellowstone to celebrate the Park Service's 100th birthday. On one of those nights, I crossed the Fire Hole River with park rangers Tammy Corchero and Rebecca Rowland. They took me across a bridge with a single flashlight that was no match for the darkness.
Are we gonna like step off this thing at any point accidentally?
No,
we don't want to do that.
Okay. See, there's railings all the way up.
Now, if the sun were shining, we'd have seen a kaleidoscope of blues and reds and yellows that ring the famous Excelsior Geyser and the Grand Prismatic Spring. But at night, from this vantage point, you couldn't really see anything. You could only hear.
That's the runoff from Excelsior Geyser, pouring out of a geyser crater into the Firehole River.
And the steam is lifting up off the ground and kind of blending in with the Milky Way.
Yes. So we're going to go up a little farther on the boardwalk because it's really cool to see the Milky Way from up top here.
And the Milky Way is why we came. The rangers led me through the rising steam to a spot on the boardwalk where at once the whole galaxy bursts into view. Turns out, you can see something in Yellowstone at night. Tammy Corchero is a park ranger whose specialty is stars.
The night sky out here is overwhelming, especially for folks that have never seen a sky like this. It's amazing. It's like we're completely surrounded here by the universe, wouldn't you say?
You can see the Milky Way maybe as clear as I have ever seen the Milky Way before.
Awesome. Well, that's interesting that you say that because about a third of the population of the world can't see the Milky Way anymore. And that includes about 80% of the population of North America. So we now have whole generations of people here in the United States who have never seen the Milky Way. Huh. And so that's, one reason why it's so important to protect dark skies like this. It makes me kind of sad to think that there are people that might go through their whole life and never experience something like this. You know, there actually was an astronomer who worked for the U.S. Naval Observatory. His name was Jeff Chester, and he said the night sky is the world's largest national park with its stark beauty available to anyone who steps outside and looks up.
I can see a satellite moving across the sky there. What else do you see?
Sometimes when you sit under a dark sky like this, there's so many stars, and it is really exceptionally clear tonight. There's so many stars that you almost can't even recognize the constellations that you do know.
There's the Big Dipper.
We see the Big Dipper, okay? And the Big Dipper is not actually a constellation. It's
what?
No. It's an
astrology. You're blowing my mind here. What are you saying the Big Dipper is not
a constellation? It's not a constellation. It's actually an asterism. And an asterism is a highly recognizable part of a constellation.
Time out. Stop. What are you doing right now?
So this is a really cool tool that astronomers, and I'm not an astronomer, but I love to share the night sky with people. So I don't know how they did it before this.
You are lightsabering.
Isn't it cool?
Outer space.
I wish that Rebecca had one too.
I love this thing. What is this? What's it called?
It's a laser pointer.
But it's not a normal laser pointer.
It is.
Well, it's a pretty high-powered laser pointer.
Can I just run my finger through it?
Yeah, I think you'll be okay.
Whoa! Oh, my God. Oh, that was so weird.
Cool.
There's a giant green light just came off my fingernail. No,
I
never have.
We use them at Carlsbad Caverns.
I feel like a small child or something.
Yeah. These are awesome. So they help us to, point out distinct things in the night sky. So the Big Dipper is a part of the constellation Ursa Major.
Oh, that's right. We were talking about the Big Dipper.
Right. Okay. So the Great Bear, and so the Dipper part of it, that's his body, and then the handle, that's his tail. One really cool thing about the Big Dipper is that it helps us to orient ourselves at night. So if you follow these front two stars here...
Can I see if I remember my middle school astronomy
class? Yes, definitely.
If you follow
awesome.
Those front two stars, yep. Is it going to point me to the North Star?
Yes, Polaris, that star right there.
Oh my gosh.
Isn't that awesome?
And so you just found that star out of the middle of a sea of stars.
I've been out here a few times. So this star, Polaris, is a relatively stationary star, at least how it appears to us. And the reason why it's stationary is because it lies directly above the Earth's axis of rotation. So if you took a line and you drew it from the South Pole through the center of the Earth, through the North Pole, and extended it out into space, it would eventually intersect with Polaris. Huh. Now, an interesting thing about Polaris is that it hasn't always been and it will not always be the North Star, because there's enough wobble in the Earth's rotation on its axis that over time our view of the stars changes. So in about 2,000 years, let me see if I can find it. There's a lot of stars out there tonight. Huh. This star right here, Arai, will become the North Star. So sometime around the year 4100. Okay, here's another cool star. Can you see that red star right there?
Let's see.
So I'm kind of pointing. I'll take the laser
pointer.
Yeah,
I mean, I can, but I would never have guessed that that was red unless you told me.
Right. You kind of have to know what you're looking at. That's called the Garnet Star, and it's part of this constellation Cepheus. That's believed to be one of the reddest stars in the sky, and it's also one of the biggest stars in the sky. That's actually a red supergiant star. I'll show you another one here in Scorpius that's, you know, looks more like a supergiant star. That star, let me find it again, right here, is almost 900 million miles in diameter.
And yet it looks like a tiny
little prick of light. It's a tiny dot. You would never find that star if I hadn't pointed it out to you.
I don't know how you did it.
Well, because I know where it is.
Are you lying to me?
No, I'm not making... Well, I could totally make stuff up out here, couldn't I?
Oh my gosh, did you just see that shooting star?
Yeah. No, I was looking over here this way.
So, where we're standing right now, and if the sun were up and it were the middle of the day, there would be hundreds, maybe thousands of people here in the middle of the summer, right?
Oh,
right,
yes.
Now, we are absolutely by ourselves.
Awesome.
How does the park change for you when the sun goes down?
Well, it provides us, or it provides me, but all of us, access to this whole other half of Yellowstone. And because this park has recognized the value of dark night skies, we are working to protect it. The park does not allow any outdoor lighting outside of develop areas. So no lights on the roads, no lights on the trails, no lights in the backcountry on structures like patrol cabins. And that's to preserve the quality of this wilderness setting that we have here in Yellowstone. And this dark, pristine, amazing sky that we have here tonight is very much a part of that wilderness setting.
Even with those protections, do you feel like the sky is threatened?
Yes. The sky is always threatened because there's no guarantee that protections will always be in place. Things change, right? And as I said earlier, you know, a third of the world cannot see the Milky Way anymore. It's actually estimated that light pollution is going to continue to increase at a rate of about 6% per year. And so by the end of this century, no one in the developed world will have dark night skies unless areas are protected. And so right now, one of the things Yellowstone is doing is trying to qualify or get designated as a dark sky park. In 2015, I think there were 19 dark sky parks around the world, state parks, national parks, and other protected areas. One of the qualifications is that 67%, or about two-thirds, of outdoor lights in your park need to be what we call fully shielded, which means the only light that you see is coming down.
It points down. There's a cover on top of it that prevents it from going up.
Prevents it from going up and also prevents it from going out to the sides. We have more than 5,000 outdoor lights in this park. That's a big job to go and inventory all these lights. So we got some help from Oregon Northern University, and they have inventoried a lot of our lights. They've checked the fixtures, the lamps. They've done some nighttime readings. And from what I understand, this is supposed to be completed this next week.
As we speak, I'm seeing another example of light pollution, and it's right over that ridge. The Maple Fire is burning, and you can see it coming up over the mountain in the darkness. Isn't that amazing?
Yes, yes. And that's natural light pollution.
We can live with that.
Yeah, we can. And the moon, you know, you only get stars or skies like this when you don't have the moon out, right? And the moon will come up here in a little while.
Well, Tammy Corchero, we've been speaking for all this time in the darkness. I haven't even seen your face.
Yeah, but look at what you have been seeing. I mean, come on.
Thank you very much.
Oh, you're welcome. It's been a privilege and a pleasure to be out here with you tonight.
And sure enough, the moon came out a few minutes later and washed away our view. Beauty is fleeting. Look up while you can. It's here and now.